And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hi, I'm Keith Law. This is episode 87 of The Keith Law Show. Going to go short on the intro today because we got a long conversation. Talked to my longtime friend Chris Crawford about the Oscars. They're coming up this Sunday. He and I both love movies. We both try to see as many of the Oscar nominees as we can. I think he's ahead of me, but since I finally saw all 10 Best Picture nominees, I felt qualified to at least have this conversation. No, we are not professional critics. We're just guys with opinions. If you are a subscriber to The Athletic, I had a number of posts over the last week reacting to, I think, all the major trades and a couple of the free agent signings that took place right after the lockout, including the trades of Matt Olson and Matt Chapman. If there are other big trades, I will react to those. I'll react to some of the signings as well. But it's also baseball season, and I'm hoping to get out to Arizona in a couple of days to do some more in-person scouting. Now it is my pleasure to be joined by my friend and old podcast partner, Chris Crawford of NBC Sports Edge. You can follow him at Crawford_MILB. He covers baseball, particularly prospects, but all baseball, and college football for NBC Sports Edge. And like me, he just really likes movies. And we, a couple years ago, did a few podcasts just leading into the Oscars where we tried to see everything we could of all the Oscar nominees. Mm-hmm. I think, Chris, you are currently ahead of me, but that's okay. I've been playing some catch up recently, but we are going to talk about the Oscars and who we think is going to win and should win and where they screwed up, because of course we, as two non-professional critics, have all the answers.
Yeah, you better believe we've got all the answers. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to do this. We did like three in a row, and then we had to take a pause. And honestly, it was best that we took a pause for 2021 because, like, the 2020 movie season was a very difficult to get everything in. I ended up getting it in like at the very last moment, but this year I saw way too many movies, so I'm ready to discuss.
Do you know how many you've seen from the 2021 cycle?
Oh boy, I would guess something like 150, something along.
Oh my
that
god,
line.
Good for you.
I mean, look, I don't have children. I have two dogs that are potty trained. I have the ability to just kind of take my time. And when I'm doing my writing or something like that, I can put on a movie. I don't know how you are, Keith, but I struggle doing if I'm watching a new movie, I really try not to do writing or anything like that because I really want to pay close attention to it. But sometimes it's the movie's not so great. Yeah. It's better to just kind of start.
Oh, we're going
to
talk about at least one of those.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good to me, sir.
Why don't we start with the acting category? So for listeners, cool. The way Chris and I have generally done this past, we'll run through seven or eight of the categories. I think there's enough to talk about this year. We're just going to do the acting categories, directing and best picture. But we may comment on some of the others as we go. I think that's probably inevitable, actually. And there's other I do want to talk about, Flea, which I actually still haven't seen, but I know that you have, because that has made history even through its three nominations. And I think it's worth, would love to at least get your thoughts on that. So why don't we start with the acting categories? And I will give my, just before asking your opinion, just give my major problem this year, which is, I believe, seven of the 10 nominees for Best Actor and Best Actress are for people portraying real, actual people, right? They're just impersonations. Now I'm counting Macbeth, right? King Macbeth was an actual King of Scotland.
Right.
You could argue that's maybe not quite the same. If he's doing an impersonation, we don't really know. But that just seems to be the thing, right? If you want to get an Oscar nomination, one of your best ways to do it is to just portray a real person. And hopefully with the help of makeup and prosthetics and hair, you can look like that person. So I just think that has kind of colored my opinion of these categories as a whole, and it certainly skews who I think should win these things. But we'll start. Let's start with Best Actress. We have Jessica Chastain for The Eyes of Tammy Faye, Olivia Colman, the great Olivia Colman, for The Lost Daughter, Penelope Cruz for Parallel Mothers, which I think was the one surprise for me, Nicole Kidman for Being the Ricardos, and Kristen Stewart for Spencer. So why don't you tell me who you like to win, who you think will win? I know you pay a lot of attention to the odds in these categories.
Sure.
And who you think should win, and was there anybody you thought was really snubbed for this category?
I don't know if there was a huge snub. I think one of the things that surprised me the most was actually Kristen Stewart getting nominated, mm-hmm. because she was considered the favorite for a very long time, like a significant favorite. And then she just wasn't getting nominated. And of course, there's probably some shenanigans with her not getting a BAFTA nomination, playing the Princess of Wales.
Good point.
You have to wonder if there was something else going on there. Lady Gaga was also considered a strong contender for this. All due respect to Lady Gaga, who I think is absolutely fantastically talented and carried A Star Is Born, as good as Bradley Cooper is. That, I mean, just an absolute, literally a star was born, as she was obviously a star before, but an acting star was born before. She was not great in House of Gucci. It was, again, another person playing another person. I think the winner is going to be Jessica Chastain for Eyes of Tammy Faye. This is an interesting year for it. A lot of times when we get to this point of the year, we have significant favorites for actor and actress. We've got one for actor now, but for a while it was kind of neck and neck. It is wide open between the five. The betting odds are anywhere from betting $100, $150 to win $100, which makes their a favorite, but not like prohibitive favorite for Chastain. But all five of these people have a little bit of shot. I honestly think Penelope Cruz should win. I think it's the best performance that I saw from an actor or actress this year, I would say. She has no shot. She is the one person that we were talking to take everything I just said. She's the one person I think that doesn't have a shot at winning this. But I think the fact that it's an original performance and it's so believable and just hits the nail on the head the whole time through. The Eyes of Tammy Faye movie it's literally, okay, great. The makeup made her look like her for a lot of the movie. Jessica Chastain is a very talented actress.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a best actress winning performance. Kristen Stewart is terrific in a terrible
movie. That is such a bad movie. It's actually near the bottom. I've only seen 30-odd movies from last year.
Sure.
And it's, I think, second from the bottom on my list.
Yeah, it's not a great movie. I was honestly surprised. Rotten Tomatoes disagrees with us very much. But I will say, the one thing about it is like it's like 90%, but there's a lot of 2.5 out of 4-star reviews for this thing. And it's a lot of it is carried by the score is very good and Kristen Stewart is very good.
Yeah.
There's no denying that. But I would guess that just because Chastain appears to have the momentum that she takes this, but I would not be surprised if it ended up being Kristen Stewart just because it seems to have played better in America than it did overseas
for
performance anyway.
Personally, of these five, to me, it's Colman and Cruz are at the top above the three impersonations. Stewart was very good. I think Chastain was basically just doing the makeup and a really annoying, although somewhat accurate, voice.
Yes.
And Kidman, actually kind of the same thing, just rocking an accent. Right. And that's
absolutely
like, okay, sure. And I mean, the one thing I'll say for being the Ricardos is, it's Sorkin. It's entertaining and it's too long.
Yeah.
I mean, like any movie he writes and directs too, you know exactly what you're getting. But the movie just at least hummed along because there's so much dialogue and there's some funny moments. But then at the end, that was empty calories. To me, the one person who was snubbed, and we never know how close anybody came to getting a nomination, but Renate Reinsve for The Worst Person in the World, because she is that movie.
Great. Yep. Great call.
Yeah, she absolutely deserved it over Kidman or Chastain. I wouldn't necessarily argue against Stewart because I think you're right. Kristen Stewart is the entire movie and her performance is great in a really, really bad, unfortunate mess of a movie.
Yeah.
But Reinsve is, the movie's been acclaimed. The Worst Person in the World, which for folks who don't know, it is the it's also nominated for Best International Feature Film. It is Norwegian. We actually saw it. My wife and I saw it in our local art theater just a week or so ago. Yeah, which was great. They've been running through several of the nominees. Parallel Mothers has been there. Drive My Car has been there several times, which is we saw that one at home. That's we'll talk about that in a minute. 3 hours in a movie theater is probably a bit much for me. I just don't have the patience to sit still for that long. But
no judgment here.
No, Vranitzeva was she's so good. She's compelling. Great. And I had some issues with her. I think I like that movie less than most people, but she's amazing. And she if she's not what she is, that movie doesn't work. And I would actually give her even a little bit of an edge over Cruz, who is great. And funny thing, I saw Parallel Mothers myself in that art theater. And as I'm walking out, there are people who are probably closer to my parents' age, all commenting on how good Penelope Cruz looks and saying, does she just not age? It is kind of true, right? She looks,
it's true.
I looked it up. I'm like, oh my God, she's reasonably close to my age. And she definitely does not look it at all.
Jeez. That's a great point. She's so good in that movie. I think a lot of people maybe get thrown off by the title of that film and think that it's
which
going
isn't
to be
her.
No, it's not at all. No, she is far from the worst person in the world. She's just someone who is going through life. Like I imagine the title maybe plays better in Norway. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like in a different language, it's almost like it's not quite an ironic title, but it's like, I just loved that movie. And it was also, it's worth pointing out that this is a film that got nominated for Best Screenplay as well, which you do not see a lot of international features getting multiple nominations in other categories. We'll talk about a few that have nominations in a bunch of categories, but that just like not on a tangent, just speaks to how strong the international class was this year.
Do you think it has any shots? It's Best Original Screenplay. And I think it is the only one, it's like the odd one out for that category, if I remember correctly. It's Belfast, Don't Look Up, King Richard, Licorice Pizza, right? So four movies nominated for Best Picture, and then The Worst Person in the World. And I wondered if this was one of those, like, you're not winning Best International. Like, that's just not a thing. We already know what's winning that category. Do they throw it a bone for Best Original Screenplay? Or are they doing that somewhere else? Like, does Belfast get that? Or Licorice Pizza? Because, well, Belfast might win Best Picture. Licorice Pizza, I think, has no chance to win Best Picture.
Right. Yeah, and I would still say that the thing that Licorice Pizza is going to win is, I think this is Paul Thomas Anderson's award. Like, I just think
for director
that for, excuse me, for Best Original.
Oh, for Best Original.
I think that PTA has just got this. He's been a guy who's been nominated for a lot. He's not quite the Susan Lucci type thing, but he's a guy who has been,
the streak is over. We're old. Exactly. I bet you a lot of people listening are like, what? Who
we like to make people Google as much as possible. Yes. But yeah, I think PTA has that one locked up. One of the nominations for Best Original Screenplay is probably my least favorite movie of the year, and Don't Look Up.
Oh, we're getting to that. We'll get to
for sure. Yep. But yeah, it would be cool to see Worst Person in the World. I wouldn't like throw a tizzy fit about this. I won't throw a tizzy fit about any of this. But I do think that Licorice Pizza was so hailed, and I think finished like, it's going to be this movie that finished like third on everybody's top 10 list, that I think that this is going to be that award that they end up giving it.
I am going to throw a tantrum if Don't Look Up wins Best Picture. I'm just going to tell you that.
That's fair.
All right, so let's talk about Best Actor. So again, we have technically four people impersonating real people, if you count Denzel Washington for Tragedy of Macbeth, which I liked. I never wrote about it because honestly, I felt stupid. I'm like, it's Shakespeare. What the hell do I have to say? And it's a very spare, it's authentic, except obviously they cut it down, but it's just like the production there is just, no, we're doing the play. The play's the thing, right? We're just going to be, I know it's wrong, Shakespeare, but we're just going to do this as simple as possible. And I thought it was really effective. He is nominated Javier Bardem in Being the Ricardos, Benedict Cumberbatch in Power of the Dog, Andrew Garfield in Tick, Tick, Boom, which I will at least give him points. Yes, he is playing a real person, but that was written by the real person originally. So I'm kind of okay with that. And then Will Smith in King Richard, who I think for a while, you tell me if this is true, but at least early on it was, oh, he's winning this.
Yeah. So this is interesting because if you would have if we would have recorded this podcast on Boxing Day, sorry, that I guess that's a holiday everywhere else. I would have
said, we have an international audience, Chris. It's okay. Yes.
Great, great, awesome. Will Smith on Boxing Day, I would have said, is a lock to win this.
Yep.
If we would have recorded this on Valentine's Day, I would have said Benedict Cumberbatch is a lock to win this. Mm-hmm. And now I'm back to Will Smith as being a formidable favorite in winning this award, just because of how everything has gone with the previous awards. The BAFTAs are usually a very telling thing. He ended up taking that home. Cumberbatch, to me, is the best performance of these five, partially because he's not playing a real person. I'm sorry. I'm just kind of tired of the biopics. They're good for money, and they're a chance for actors to do their replication. I'm sure they enjoy that. I like original characters. I call me USA characters. Welcome, man. I like seeing something that is, can have a little more broad strokes. And I thought Benedict Cumberbatch is terrific. I will say that if I was voting, none of these five people would win. And my award for best actor would go to Anthony Ramos for In the Heights, because I thought he had the best performance of the year by far. I think he is the talent that he shows with like his singing and all of that stuff, but there is real emotional depth in that performance as well. I think Usnavi is one of the most interesting characters that I've seen on the screen in a couple of years. I was not shocked that it didn't get nominated, because it came out in April and, or excuse me, it came out in June. I'm sorry,
but that's still, right? Yeah, but it's forever ago.
Yeah, it's forever ago. And you know, it's just, unless you're that super duper star performer, the chances of you getting nominated for a movie that comes out in summer flick, and honestly tanked, it did not do well at the box office, did very well with critics, but obviously forgotten about. But I thought Ramos was the best performance here. Javier Bardem getting a nomination here is just nuttier than squirrel turds to me, man. Yeah. I'm sorry. I just, and Javier Bardem, again, terrific actor who has done some very good movies and some very bad movies. The Counselor is one of my least favorite movies of all time, but it's such a mess, dude. But I will say that I am totally fine with Will Smith winning. I think he gives his best performance of his career. I would lean Cumberbatch of the five, but I don't have an issue with Will Smith taking this home.
I would, of the five, I would vote Cumberbatch. I thought Will Smith was very good, but again, yeah, it's an impersonation. And to me, that's points off for me. That immediately is points off for me, because it is so hard. And it's not that I would never vote for someone. I actually thought Renee Zellweger in Judy, another bad, but it's a bad movie.
Yes.
Like, I think at the time I said, yeah, that's fine. She deserved it. She was good. But also, she was doing an impersonation. To me, it detracts from my, watching the performance. It makes me, am I really watching acting, right? Or am I just watching somebody do a 2-hour impersonation? But
right,
for me, the best performance, I think, of the year by an actor, again, not nominated, was Simon Rex in Red Rocket, where he's horrible. And he's so good at being horrible. That's a terrible person. He might be the worst person in the world.
Yeah.
And he is so good at it. It also includes, you know, this was the year where to get Oscar nominations or even consideration, you had to have a scene of somebody running. We had many of those. His scene running might be the funniest. I won't say why. That is pretty funny. He's great. That movie's great. It is available to rent on streaming now. I highly recommend it. He is just a terrible person. He's not a lovable rascal. He's charming, but in the worst way. And it's a great movie. And Susanna Son, who plays who's the lead actress in the movie, is a revelation. I think she's going to be a star.
Absolutely.
For folks who've seen The Florida Project, which was not my number one movie of, I think it was 2018. It's Sean Baker, the same director, same co-writer. And this was, apparently he'd been working on something else, scrapped another project, and kind of did this one on a dime. And it is so good. And I didn't even know who Simon Rex really was. My wife remembered him from his days as an MTV personality. And this is not his first film role, but his first significant or even remotely serious film role. And he's so good in it. And you just, he's hateable.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know what? That's something that, like, that type of thing just doesn't get Oscar nominations. It just doesn't. And that's frustrating. And that's one of the problems with, I think, the Academy Awards. The last hateable character, I think, that I can think of winning was Heath Ledger for his Joker portrayal. I guess that Joaquin Phoenix and his Joker portrayal was kind of hateable too, but I just try to forget that.
He was more pathetic.
So much.
Like, yeah,
there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. We had a run where like Ledger won and Bardem won for just, right? Didn't he win for
No Country for Old Men?
Serial Killer.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a good call.
It was just like pure evil, right? Which, you know, I actually have not seen it. I read the book. And it was like, I don't think I need to see that movie, which is, you know, my loss, I'm sure. But there's certain movies where I'm like, there's plenty of other movies to see, right? You pick and choose, so.
Yeah, I wish I did more picking and choosing, to be completely honest with you. By the way, Sean Baker, Tangerine, his first movie, is an absolute must watch as well. Yeah. He is probably my favorite filmmaker right now because Red Rocket was just unbelievably good. And Florida Project we both raved about during that podcast as well. But yeah, that's a good call. I would definitely nominate Simon Rex over four of these five, I think. It's and then Andrew Garfield's performance, just real quick, it's like, I will give him some credit because I think he's playing more of an idea of a character than a straight up imitation type of thing. And
yes,
you know, I give people credit. Imitation is hard work, but I watch a lot of these movies. I've talked about this on every single one of these podcasts that we've done. Is I will watch a performance, and this was especially true with Gary Oldman for his performance in
Darkest Hour.
Darkest Hour as Winston Churchill. Oh, yeah, God. But I watch these movies, and I think that is Gary Oldman doing a Winston Churchill impression.
Yeah.
Like, I very rarely get lost in a character, you know what I mean, where you actually forget that the actor is doing the impression. And that's the same thing that's true for me for Jessica Chastain, as good as the makeup was in that performance, as like to make her look like a version of that character. I never forgot it was Jessica Chastain doing a impression. Like Benedict Cumberbatch's performance in Power of the Dog, because he's not playing a real character, but you get lost in that character. You forget that it's Benedict Cumberbatch doing an acting performance. You just get kind of lost in that. And that's what I want to see from my acting nominations. I don't just want to see, I'm sorry, who's the guy who does the John Madden impersonation that everybody loves about and they think it's so hilarious?
Caliendo? Frank Caliendo?
And all due respect to that guy.
It's like Rich Little, right? Those are impersonations. Yeah. That's a separate skill, but it's not acting.
Or Kevin Pollak. Like those guys, their impressions of people are great, but just doing a reference to something is not good acting. I'm sorry. And again, Will Smith, a good performance, and he's going to win. I think he's a minus 1,000 right now. So you need to bet $1,000 in order to win 100. It's just not it's not like an elite tier performance. Whereas if Cumberbatch won, or if Simon Rex won, or if Anthony Ramos won, I think you could more justify those being the performances that I want to remember.
You know, one other thing, last thing I'll say on this category is that Garfield, he's impersonating somebody we don't know. Right? Jonathan Larson died before he was even remotely famous. It's very different, I think, from Chastain, Kidman, you know, even to some extent, Will Smith, the person he's portraying is still alive. And we saw him on TV a lot. He was not famous for himself. Obviously, he's famous because of his daughters, but he was on camera enough that we can also connect the impersonation to the actual person, whereas that is not true in Garfield portraying Jonathan Larson. Obviously also not true in the case of Macbeth, which is why I'm being slightly facetious when I include Denzel Washington in an impersonation part. I do recommend, but Tragedy of Macbeth is on Apple TV Plus if you have that.
Solid.
It's worth seeing. I'm actually a little disappointed that my daughter, who's in high school, is not doing that play this year. Because I did it in ninth grade. I think my wife said she also did it in high school, and I'm hoping my daughter does it at some point because it's right here, right? It's here. It is. Here's the play, a 2-hour version of the play. You can watch a very good, very faithful adaptation in addition to, you know, obviously what you read. And of course she's not reading it. God forbid. I'm going to write an angry letter to the powers that be.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Well, let's run through. So the supporting actor categories are, I think they're also very interesting. They tend to get, obviously, a lot lower billing. We'll start with actress. So Jessie Buckley for The Lost Daughter, a surprise to me, but very happy to see that. Love that movie. Love her. She's been great in multiple things. She's great in Wild Rose. She was great in Beast. She was actually pretty good in a thankless little role in Judy as well. Ariana DeBose for West Side Story. Judi Dench for Belfast. Kirsten Dunst for The Power of the Dog, and Anjanue Ellis for King Richard. I'm just going to say, what the hell is Judi Dench doing in this category?
I am so confused how Dench gets the nomination over Balfour.
Right.
And I just don't get it.
She was right there. It's the same movie. You watched the same movie and you picked the wrong one.
Honestly, this is the closest thing to me that the Oscars doing a Golden Globes type thing where you're nominating the it's not so much about the fame. It's about the honoring of Judi Dench, who is a otherworldly actress.
She's already won.
But she's been, and she's on the screen for like 4.5 minutes or something.
Yeah. Well, basically
like
total. Just like when she won for Shakespeare in Love, at least then she was playing the queen. You're like, okay, fine.
Yeah.
They just put a bad wig on her and gave her an Oscar nomination.
I just don't get that decision, because Balfour entire movie. It's a movie that I liked a lot more than we'll probably talk about that point in betting on anybody else. And I don't have an issue with it. The movie is not great for me. I think it's a beautiful movie, but it's an unnecessary movie. It just doesn't really serve a purpose. I don't know why we're watching it, but I was glad I saw it just for DeBose's performance. She's a star and apparently has been very good on Broadway things before this. I have zero issue. Kirsten Dunst is very good as well. Mm-hmm. That whole cast is. It's so surprising to me, by the way, real quick, Power of the Dog has all these great performances. How was that not nominated for a Screen Actors Guild Award for Best Ensemble?
Yeah,
like, I just don't know how that could be possible, because there were other people nominated. It can't be that it wasn't eligible. Like, what was missing from that cast to suggest that it wasn't eligible or wasn't worthy of a nomination? Because there's the acting carries that movie. There's some beautiful cinematography too, but you need the performances for that movie to work. Anjanue Ellis, I think, is just fine in King Richard. Buckley is a star. I love
so
you brought her to my attention. She's really, really good. And I really liked The Lost Daughter, a movie that just missed my top 10. But if you're looking at who's going to win, if anybody but Ariana DeBose wins, it is that 16 beating the one.
The snub for me here, and it's just the whole movie was snubbed. Ruth Negga for Passing. Passing is, we'll do our top 10s at the end. Passing is in my top 10. I am so mad at Netflix for just completely dropping the ball on Passing. Should have gotten Best Picture, Best Adapted Screenplay, probably should have gotten 2 acting nominations. I would say Negga was better than Tessa Thompson, but they're both so great. And if this was going to get a single nomination, this would have been it. And if you just told me Ruth Negga did not get a supporting actress nod, I would have been like, I would have guessed Passing probably just got shut out completely. And that is unfortunately what happened.
Yeah, that was a disappointing thing for me as well. And I thought she had some momentum. I would say the biggest snub for me actually from there would be Ann Dowd for her performance in Mass. So good. That is a movie that got no attention and I believe got completely shut out from here. I would definitely watch it. It's, I think it's stronger in the first half than it is in the second half, but it is still well worth watching. Terrific performances all the way through. The type of movie that the Oscars just loves to snub, though, because it just doesn't have the big set pieces. It's literally one set. So it is. But yeah, I think Ann Dowd is phenomenal in it. I certainly would have nominated her over Dame Judi Dench. And honestly,
Judi Dench. Yes.
and over Anjanette Ellis, with all due respect, because she's very good.
Ellis is good. It's just it's a smaller role. My very knock smaller. On Ellis there would just be, she doesn't have a whole lot to do, and that's not on her, that's on the script.
100%.
Yeah. All right, let's talk supporting actor. And hold on, I lost track of my ballot here. Oh, there we go. Okay, Ciaran Hinds for Belfast, Troy Kotsur for Coda, Jesse Plemons for The Power of the Dog, Cody Smith-McPhee for The Power of the Dog, and J.K. Simmons for Being the Ricardos. To me, Simmons is, he's great. Again, what is why that made no sense to me. It also seems like there's zero chance that he's going to win. Whereas, like, if Judi Dench won Best Supporting Actress, I'd be low key mad about it. But I wouldn't be 100% surprised. You know, there are people who are going to vote for her because they're like, oh, well, that's Judi Dench. I'm just going to vote. Sure. She was so good in, you know, this movie 15 years ago. I'm going to vote for her.
Yeah, it would make more sense again as like a Lifetime Achievement Award. But again, she's got plenty. She's doing just fine. This one is down to Kotsur and Smith-McPhee. It looked like Smith-McPhee was a prohibitive favorite, but Kotsur has won pretty much everything ever since. And I don't have an issue with it. He is terrific. And I think that it's a flawed film. Like, it's not like a perfect movie by any stretch of the imagination, but it's elevated by the performances, and Kotsur's performance in particular is so good. I would have no issue with that. I would have no issue with Smith-McPhee winning either.
Yeah, I agree.
I look forward to seeing what's next from him. I think he gives a really solid performance. A big reason why that movie works. Again, I know it's nominated for in like every dang category, but I don't think it works without the performances. Plemons is very solid as well. Hinds, to me, again, I think that this is just throwing Belfast some nominations, knowing that what was once the favorite to win the Best Picture, like a prohibitive favorite, like a favorite among favorites.
I do not understand at all. We'll talk about that in a moment.
Sure, absolutely. But yeah, it's going to be either Kotsur or McPhee. And if you were looking at the betting odds, it's Kotsur by a not insubstantial amount.
So for best, was there a snub for that category? There wasn't really a big one for me. I just went and double checked my list and I didn't have an obvious snub.
I would say that this is actually one of the weakest best supporting actor like groups that I can remember from a while.
Fair.
A lot of times I look the most forward to best supporting actor and best supporting actress because they are the necessary. They kind of make good movies into great movies. And I don't see anybody here that really turned a good movie into a great movie. All due respect again to these guys, as if they're listening to me and all of a sudden going to come in.
I'm just kind of off the cuff and just to have a name too. It's Mike Feist from
West Side Story.
Plays Riff in West Side Story.
Yeah,
who is
absolutely
so much better than Ansel Elgort. You know, this is the problem. 100%. My wife and I ended up having a long debate, and you know, she doesn't like Elgort either. We both agreed. She's like, but Feist doesn't look the part of Tony. That's probably a big part of how they cast it. He actually looks more the part of Riff. It really works. And Feist also has great history. He originated the role of Connor in Dear Evan Hansen on Broadway. He's got a long history on stage. He owns the screen. The problem that one of the many problems I had with West Side Story, which I think, again, was fine, but when those two men are on the screen, you're looking at Riff and you're supposed to be looking at Tony.
Yes. Yeah, that's a great call. I will say the one that I was very nervous about getting nominated, and I like Ben Affleck, but if Ben Affleck would have gotten nominated for The Tender Bar, I would have.
I haven't even seen it.
It's not worth watching.
That's what everyone says. Yeah,
it's like Ben Affleck isn't bad in it, but he certainly didn't deserve a Best Supporting Actor nomination. The nominations that he did get were the definition of, I want Ben Affleck to be in front of my TV.
On our broadcast. So let's jump to Best Director. So all five of these were also nominated for Best Picture. Now, with five nominees for Best Director, 10 for Best Picture, I think we've seen some severance of the two categories. It used to be if you didn't win Best Director, you weren't winning Best Picture. If you weren't nominated, et cetera. I don't know that that's true anymore. However, we do have five Best Picture nominees in Best Director. There's Kenneth Branagh for Belfast, Ryusuke Hamaguchi for Drive My Car, Paul Thomas Anderson for Licorice Pizza, Jane Campion for Power of the Dog, and some guy named Spielberg for West Side Story. It's like some new up-and-comer type.
Can you spell that for me? I want to Google it.
Spiel. Oh, it's like a Spiel? Game. He must be a board game thing. Oh,
is there an umlaut over any of those? I want to
Over the okay. P.
Okay, gotcha.
Yes. So my assumption all along was that Jane Campion was going to win this because she was deserving. And I think there was some sense too, right? We've had one woman ever win to win Best Director, Catherine Bigelow, before last year, right? Chloe Zhao was second.
I think so.
I think that's right. And so there's definitely a sense of, oh, this is, by the way, multiple women who should have been nominated. Rebecca Hall could have been nominated for Passing, for example,
yes.
Or Maggie Gyllenhaal for The Lost Daughter, and they were also snubbed. So I'm not saying Campion wasn't deserving, but I think there was also, hey, she's really deserving, and also we should have more women nominated in this category. More women should be winning in this category. And then she put her foot in it.
Yeah.
At the Critics' Choice Awards, and she did that right before voting opened. I don't know if that matters. It was pretty gross, her really derogatory comments, I thought, towards the Williams sisters. At the very – the kindest thing you could say is they were incredibly tone deaf. Do you think she still wins this category?
I do, but it really made things a little more interesting. Now, it hasn't made things more interesting in Vegas. She's still negative 3,000, which means that she's got
Lord.
A bit – you've got to bet $3,000 to win 100. Spielberg is 12-1. Kenneth Branagh is 14-1. Hamaguchi 25-1, and Paul Thomas Anderson is 33-1. I have no issue with Campion winning. I do think those comments were so callous and so stupid. Like, just there was no reason to say it. Like, there no good can come from you saying anything along those lines. Anyway, just doing it, it was just unbelievably. One of the dumb things that I have seen. I will say that this is the category that gave me the biggest surprise, because Denis Villeneuve was considered not only a very good chance to get nominated, at one point was considered a strong favorite. And I would have nominated him here, and I would have nominated him over Spielberg and Branagh, because I think Dune is a movie that works a lot because of his direction. There's very good. And it got nominated like everywhere else that you would expect that would lead to a Best Director nomination, because all of the visual and all of the sound and all of the cinematography stuff, Dune is there.
Yes.
So you don't nominate the guy who is in charge of that stuff. I really don't get that. I think Branagh getting the nomination here. And again, I really like Belfast. It's a movie that we'll talk about it, I think, in a second, but if the movie's not in black and white, I don't think Kenneth Branagh gets a Best Director nomination. I'm just saying that right now. That the fact that the movie was not in black and white and the Oscar people eat that you know what up made that a nomination. I have no issue with Spielberg getting nominated either, because even if though I think that movie didn't need to be made, it's gorgeous. It is beautiful, and the pacing of the movie is just fine.
Oh, the the one shot in the gym, right? That's one continuous shot.
It's gorgeous.
It's great. I mean, that's great, right? To me, that's like, you put that, if we're talking about the best shots of the year, the best scenes of the year, that's there with Worst Person in the World, where time stops and she runs through Oslo.
Yes.
Which, by the way, best supporting actor in for Worst Person in the World would actually be the city of Oslo. And the scene in Drive My Car, which we'll get to that movie in a moment, in the back of the car where he's talking to the young actor, that whole scene, that whole conversation, that movie's great, start to finish, basically. That scene, those are the three scenes from the year where I'm like, yep, just clip those. Those are your Best Director submissions right there for those.
Yeah.
And of course, two of those three didn't get nominated.
No.
One of those three. Sorry, one of those three didn't get nominated.
Yeah. I mean, look, Campion's direction is terrific. And I totally understand why she's going to win. And I'm happy that another female is going to win.
Yeah, she is great. Right? You're not saying this. I'm not saying this. She's great. I think the movie's great. I actually like the movie quite a bit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's very good. I wish I could have seen it on a big screen, but unfortunately, that just wasn't a thing. I will say Paul Thomas Anderson, too, this is maybe his best directed film. Like, it may not be his best film. He has a lot of really, really good ones. But, man, there are some sprawling shots that are just terrific. And I literally felt like I was transported into that time frame, which I think is a lot of that goes down to the direction. This is a really strong group. It's not like Kenneth Branagh directed something that you would watch on Cinemax at 4:30 in the afternoon type of thing. It's not 10 pounds of you-know-what and a 5-pound you-know-what. It's just there were some real – and Villeneuve, I think, is a massive snub. He really deserved a nomination for this in this category.
By the way, Licorice Pizza also has a lot of running. Yes, one particularly great running scene. Right?
What a terrible year for Tom Cruise not to have a movie, man.
That's true.
He would have had lots of nominations, I think, just based on everything he's done in his career.
So before we jump to Best Picture, which last category we'll cover in full, I haven't seen Flea yet. For folks who don't know it, it has been nominated. It hit a new trifecta. It is nominated for Best Documentary Feature. It is nominated for Best International Feature Film. It is Danish, or submitted by Denmark, at least I should say. And it is nominated for Best Animated Feature Film. It is available, I believe, on Hulu. So we are going to watch. We just haven't gotten around to it. We were finishing Best Picture. And actually, last night, finally watched Luca for the first time, which very near and dear to me as somebody who my grandfather was born in Genoa. Not far at all from, right? That's where she goes to school. It's not very far from their little town. So I was like, God, these are my people. I am very happy. I have had Trinette al Pesto made for me by my cousins in Italy.
Very nice.
So talk about Flea, and particularly, do you think that has a chance to win any of these three? Because right now, I don't think it's the favorite in any of the categories.
I don't. And it's just, unfortunately, I think the thing it has the best chance to win in is the thing that it maybe shouldn't have gotten nominated in, and that's Best Documentary. I struggle calling this a documentary. It's a terrific movie that just finished outside of my top 10 as well. By the way, talking about this, it's kind of like the Ben Zobrist of nominees. It is just very versatile to have all three of those. It's really spectacular. It's something I would imagine we won't ever see again. It's very good. It's a very important story. I would recommend not knowing any plot details before going in, because having a few things spoiled for me took it. And that's true about a lot of documentaries, actually, because a lot of what happens with the best documentaries is you're starting out making one type of story and it kind of transforms into another. It doesn't quite do this, but there is an element of surprise with this that I think is best left unsaid. But it's a huge recommend for me. It's on Hulu right now. It is free for anybody to watch who has a Hulu subscription. I would definitely recommend watching it. It just comes up a little short in all of the categories that it's nominated for. Like Summer of Soul to me is the best documentary of the year. And absolutely, I probably put Flea second.
And it's going to win.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I feel like it's going to win.
And it should. Summer of Soul is an absolutely terrific documentary. Animated, I have two movies above that I would put. I would put Luca and I would put Mitchell's First Machines above it. Mitchell's First Machines has no chance of winning.
But no chance. Yeah. At all. Didn't even get a Golden Globe nomination.
That honestly had me madder than a wet head.
I remember you being mad.
Yeah, I was very upset that didn't get a nomination. But Encanto is going to end up winning that. And foreign film, it's like Drive My Car is the lock of locks. But it's very, very good. It just comes up a little bit short in all of those categories. But man, I cannot recommend watching it enough. And it's short, and it's like an hour 20. So not a movie that's going to take up a lot of your time. I would definitely recommend checking out Flea.
So let's do Best Picture. I will run through the nominations. Belfast, Coda, Don't Look Up, Drive My Car, Dune, King Richard, Licorice Pizza, Nightmare Alley, The Power of the Dog, and West Side Story. May we start and spend 1 or 2 minutes talking about just how much Don't Look Up sucks.
It It's not a good movie, man. And I got to tell you, I was a huge fan of like Adam McKay's other stuff coming into it. And I loved The Big Short. Loved, mm-hmm. loved The Big Short. Vice was a little less. Vice is Citizen Flipping Kane compared to Don't Look Up.
Oh my God, yes. It actually makes me, this movie made me think more kindly of Vice.
Yeah.
And that was not very good.
No, yeah. No. And honestly, like, talk about it. The performance of Bale really carries Vice a long way. Whereas The Big Short, perfect time for that movie to come out for one thing. And then it was such a unique and interesting way of telling that story that still, honestly, when I watch the movie, makes my blood boil at how angry I get. But I don't want to get kicked off this podcast. it's bad. The performances are bad. Like, Leonardo DiCaprio is not good in this movie. And I would never think I would say that about a Leonardo DiCaprio performance outside of Growing Pains. And that just speaks to how old I am again. But it's not good. It's one note, the definition of one note. It thinks it is giving you this brilliant satire. It's not. Everybody gets what you're trying to say with this movie. There's also a troubling, to me, tone of the movie, whereas it's trying to me to talk a lot about cancel culture as well. And one, as someone who doesn't believe cancel culture is actually a thing, I have a huge problem with that message. And two, it's so obvious. Jonah Hill's character is one of the most annoying characters that I have seen on a screen. And the only positive thing I can say is that the mid-credit scenes made me the scene in the mid-credits made me even angrier, because he's the one person who deserved to have something. I don't think I'm spoiling anything by saying
it's fine. Nobody should watch this movie if they haven't.
It's really bad, man. And it's very disappointing that I think movies like this are always going to get nominated, because it's a reward for these type of people coming together and making. I hated it, man. I really, 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 really hated it. I've seen people on Twitter that I consider smart arguing that it's one of their favorite movies, and it's been very hard to not reply.
I was so angry watching. It's the last of the 10 Best Picture nominees that we watched. Oh. And I complained. My wife could vouch. I'm pretty sure I complained through 75% of it. And I kept checking to see how much time was left. It's on Netflix. It still doesn't mean you should go watch it. No. But I kept checking. There's an hour left in this thing? Are you kidding me?
Way too long.
Can the comet just hit already? Like, you're actively rooting for the extinction of humanity. Because, like, let's just get this over with already. It is so bad. It is like getting hit over the head repeatedly with a sledgehammer.
So, oh, God, yeah.
No, I got it. I got it. Adam. I got it. And by the way, you're preaching to the choir.
Yeah, right? That's
this
the
is
whole
some
thing,
allegory
man.
For climate change and for humanity's inability to think for the long term. It's all about short term gain, short term benefit, or just avoiding short term pain, even if it's great long term benefit. I get it. I even wrote a book that's like tangentially related to some of those things. You don't need to make a movie to talk to me about that, unless you just want a bunch of people like clap you on the back and be like, yeah, you tell them. No one else is getting converted by this. This is a movie that has no reason to exist at all. And it is such a series of terrible performances. What is Mark Rylance even doing in this movie?
I don't know. Mark Rylance is bad in it. Jennifer Lawrence is bad in it.
Oh,
Meryl Streep, the goat, is bad in this movie. And that speaks to like poor direction, man. And again, I think Adam McKay is very talented. The Big Short, go watch that twice instead of watching this crap claptrap, man. It is easily the worst movie I've seen get nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah, it's pretty terrible. One thing I'll say, the running gag with the snacks.
Yes.
Isn't bad.
No.
It's okay.
Yeah. That just speaks to, that's what's frustrating too, is because like, it shows you that Adam McKay can put together a as an Anchorman and Anchorman 2 defender, I can tell you that Adam McKay is capable of producing. And I've heard really good things from most people about Winning Time as well, the new Lakers series. So it's not a case of talent. It's just clearly Adam McKay might be one of those directors that needs to have somebody rein him in a little bit.
It's like Aaron Sorkin, right?
Sure.
He's a better, and Tarantino for that matter. Yeah, since Tarantino's primary editor passed away, his movies are just, they're just sprawling. You just gotta bring it. Great that you filmed whatever 4 hours of footage, right? Can we cut this to 110 minutes?
Speaking of that, I will say the best thing about these best picture things is I was almost 100% sure that Being Ricardo's was going to get nominated, and it wasn't. And I'm pretty thankful for that.
No, I am pretty thankful for that. So what's going to win, right? Is it Power of the Dog or is something else? Does anything else have a chance here? Regardless, whether it's because of Campion's comments or any other reason, does anything else have a chance? Because that has been the favorite since about Christmas time.
So just looking here on Vegas Insider right now, and we're recording this at 11:54 Eastern, the Power of the Dog is the favorite. It is minus 250. Coda is second at plus 450. Belfast is third at plus 600. West Side Story, King Richard, Licorice Pizza, all between plus 2,000 and plus 5,000. Dune also plus 5,000. Drive My Car also plus 5,000. Don't Look Up plus 6,600. And Nightmare Alley is the long shot of long shots at plus 10,000.
Yeah, Nightmare Alley also not that good, but I would watch that over Don't Look Up 8 days a week.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, my issue with Nightmare Alley was that, again, a beautiful movie to look at. And Guillermo del Toro is just such a talented guy. I've loved pretty much, this is probably my least favorite Guillermo del Toro movie, but that's like saying that I'm not creative enough to say it. It's certainly a solid movie. Falls apart in the third act, and I think we both agree on that, with that a little bit. But I think The Power of the Dog is going to win. It's not the lock that I think it was maybe a month ago. I think Coda is rising and rising strong. I think it would be a weird winner. I really do. I wouldn't like have a tremendous, like if Don't Look Up won, I would have a much closer to a conniption compared to Coda. I think Belfast still has a slim chance. It would just be weird because it has won absolutely nothing coming into it. You usually need the momentum of like winning a bunch of awards coming into something in order to be the best to win Best Picture. Even though there's different voting segments and stuff like that, you usually see a movie win. Coda's been winning a lot of stuff, but so is The Power of the Dog.
It took the last two big ones, right? Yeah. What was it? Producers Guild and SAG?
And the Producers Guild one is a big one. It is I still think Power of the Dog ultimately wins, and it did get the BAFTA win, which I think is one of the best predictors. But I do think all three of those movies have a little bit of a shot. But if I was to make the bet, it would be on The Power of the Dog right now.
I really wish that Drive My Car had a better chance. That's clearly the best movie of the year. I think I need to just accept to be happy that it did get nominated, right?
Sure.
We're heading in the right direction here. It was used to be so unusual for a film not in the English language to get a Best Picture nomination. And then we had Parasite actually win, and it made me greedy. I think many years, my favorite movie is not one that's in the English language. Burning was my favorite movie of a couple of years ago. It actually didn't even get a Best International Feature nomination, which it certainly should have. Also an adaptation of a Haruki Murakami story, just like Drive My Car is, although both do far more with, they just take the bare bones of two very short stories by Murakami and expand them into, you know, much more complex and frankly much more interesting stories than that. That is the one, and nothing is going to win that's going to make me angry. I think of the likely winners, I would vote for Power of the Dog. If I actually had a ballot, I would certainly put Drive My Car at the top.
So I will say this. When I saw Drive My Car, about 10 minutes afterwards, I sent Keith a G-chat and said, I guarantee that you are going to love this movie. And
yes, you are correct.
Not wrong. Yeah, it is so good. I will ask you this, Keith. Do you think it helps to be familiar with Uncle Vanya before watching this film?
Oh, I think it would help a lot. In fact, as we were watching it, watched it at home, it's on HBO Max, and Also, it's 3 hours, so I did not feel bad about firing up the computer and looking at things while we were doing it. And I was reading the Uncle Vanya summary, and my wife is sitting next to me, and I was trying to, like, throw bits and pieces. Oh, this is this person. This is what's happening. This is what's happening. Because neither of us had ever seen it, read it, heard it. I think I've read maybe one selection of some Chekhov short stories, and that's it. So I don't know his plays at all.
Right.
Something about him and a gun. That's about all I got. And so I think it would help. I think it also helps if you know there's a brief scene at the beginning where the main character is directing and acting in a performance of Waiting for Godot. And yes, if you don't know, that's a little easier to get your head around, at least what the point of it is, also would be helpful. That's a pretty textured movie. There's a lot going on. It's three Very hours textual. Also, you would expect that. There's so much going on. It's just so well done. It's just consistently well executed. It is a really, it's ambitious. There are two movies this year that I thought beat all others just in terms of sheer ambition and then executing on that ambition. That's Dune and Drive My Car.
Yeah, I couldn't disagree. I couldn't disagree with that. I think that if either of those movies won, again, I still don't get how Villeneuve is not nominated for.
It's very weird.
It's very odd. Now, the movie that I would vote for is Licorice Pizza, and mm-hmm. it was, to me, pretty easily the best movie of the year. Drive My Car was a relative distant second. I will say that I do get why people have some issues with Licorice Pizza, in particular the Japanese scene. So it kind of comes down to, with me, I believe we're meant to laugh at the character who's doing that and not laugh with the character. So that's why I don't have as big of issue with it. But I am not the person who gets to set that. If people found that racist and callous and unnecessary, I can't argue with that, because it's not my job to set that. To me, the reason that it works, in my personal opinion, is because we are meant to laugh at John Michael Higgins being an absolute idiot, rather than laughing at how funny it is that he is doing a horrifically unnecessary, archaic Japanese accent.
Yeah, and he's apparently based on a real person.
Right.
Which I'm with you. Yes. Not forgiving.
No, it's a scene. And I'll be honest with you, too.
It's bothersome. It is
something that for people who have, I feel terrible for people who have, I think you know what I'm trying to say here. It's a scene that could have been cut out, too. It would have been just fine. The movie would have still been a tremendous film without it. I think that the cinematography in that film is just unbelievably good. I think the chemistry between Hoffman and Haim, and maybe Haim is somebody we should have talked about too as being a snub in this movie, because her performance, especially as a I came into this movie a bit skeptical, because I think the band Haim sucks. It is not music for it is not music for Christopher Crawford. It's just not.
Yes. But they said that actually in the credits on their last album.
I appreciate the any footnote in any album, even if 21 Pilots wants to shout out Christopher Crawford, I'm okay with that. But I think the performances are so good in that movie. I've talked to some folks who have had issues with Licorice Pizza because they struggle kind of to see the point. I think not seeing the point is kind of the point of that movie. Like, I talked to a buddy, he's like, so wait, he's an actor and now he's selling water beds and now he's doing pinball. I don't really get it. I think that's kind of the point of how life changes and how ambitions change. And like, I think Cooper Hoffman, I cannot wait to see what he does
so
next,
good.
Man.
He is so good.
And I go back to the chemistry that those two characters have. I mean, it is just such a beautiful movie, and it's laugh out loud funny. It might be laugh out loud funny more than any Paul Thomas Anderson movie I've seen since Punch Drunk Love. Because he does have a sense of humor, but sometimes when you think of Paul Thomas Anderson, you may not be thinking about the giggles that you're going to have watching it.
Yeah, like Phantom Thread.
Exactly.
Not.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That's a dark, funny movie in some ways, but it's not exactly a movie that is going to be nominated for Best Comedy at the Golden Globes. But yeah, no. I think this is a solid group of movies. I don't know if there's any movie that I'm going to come back to other than Licorice Pizza and maybe Drive My Car. I'd really like to give Drive My Car another watch too. It ended up second on my list, but I will admit that a 3-hour movie, I'd kind of like to be able to sit through it all in one. I could not do the whole thing together. I think it's important if you can try to get the whole thing through. I know sometimes they put intermissions in these things. Apparently the Batman has an intermission in some places because it's 2 hours and 55 minutes. But long story short, which is, I guess, a pun, both of those movies would be just fine for me winning, but I don't think they have any shot.
So let's wrap with, and we've kind of already hinted at both of ours, but why don't you give me your top 10 movies for 2021, at least so far, right? Because we could always see more.
Yeah, we could.
Take us from 10 to 1.
Okay, so from in order from 10 to 1 or backwards, I guess. 10 is Summer of Soul, 9 The Green Knight, 8 Dune, 7 Power of the Dog, 6 Belfast, 5 In the Heights, 4 Mitchells vs. Machines, 3 Worst Person in the World, 2 Drive My Car, and 1 Licorice Pizza.
Ah, we have a fair amount of overlap here. For me, it's 10 is Come On, Come On, 9 Red Rocket, 8 Passing, 7 The Power of the Dog, 6 Summer of Soul, glad we agree on that. Mm-hmm. 5 Parallel Mothers, 4 Licorice Pizza, 3 The Lost Daughter, 2 Dune, and 1 Drive My Car.
So we're very close on the top.
Belfast. Honestly, Licorice Pizza it's that one. The John Michael Higgins thing just made me back off a little bit because I just don't, right? It's like you said, it's not our place.
No.
But I've seen enough commentary that it has made me say, you know, I need to respect people who are basically saying, yeah, this is wrong.
100%.
Yep. And so that was me. You know, there's no right answer. It to me, it's, do you take it off? How far do you knock it down? I'm trying to basically, this is some King Solomon solution, which is not great, but yeah, that's where I ended up.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we talk about Keith when we're watching baseball players, you see what you see. Mm-hmm. It ends up going into the report. And if that, I can totally understand why people have issues with it. And again, if I was Paul Thomas Anderson, I would just cut both of those scenes out. So Belfast is the one that I think is like the most that we kind of disagree with. And I get it. Like Belfast, if it does not hit you emotionally, then it is not going to be a top 10 movie for you. It absolutely got me in the feels. And that was enough for me to put it in. And on top of, I do think that the film is well-directed and well-paced. And I think, I forget the name of the young boy, but I think he gives an excellent performance.
He is great. You know, the girl, his little lady love in the class there, who he barely talks to. I forget her name. That's David Tennant's daughter.
Oh, no kidding. That's awesome.
It is awesome.
By the way, it was funny that with Coda that we both forgot, or it was hard for us to realize, a movie we both loved, Sing Street, that was the...
Yes! Oh my God. Everybody, if you haven't seen Sing Street, go watch Sing Street. Good. One of the best musicals of the last 10, 20 years. It is. It's
so good. It's great. So good.
Yeah, so Miles from Coda, it plays the lead in Sing Street. Absolutely. That movie is just fun.
I still listen to the songs from it all the time. I put on...
Drive It Like You Stole It.
Yeah, Drive It Like You Stole It and She Lets Me Up are two of the things that I replay all of the time. In the Heights is a movie I kind of wanted to talk about a little bit too. I think it really got hurt by that release date, as we said.
Yeah, but it was 12th on my list.
It is so beautiful, and it is, the performances are so good. I also will say this: I understand the controversy there as well, that the not everybody in that community felt included. And again, Keith and I do not get to judge what offends people and what includes inclusion. But I just thought it was so beautiful. The songs are so, like, I like Hamilton, but I think the music in The Heights is so much better, in part because it's not the same da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. There's an actual variety to the music. And again, I really like Hamilton, and I think it's an important thing for everybody to watch. But I think in The Heights, it certainly works better as a movie, too, because it has more chance to change set stuff. I imagine that Hamilton would probably have to be like a 3-hour movie directed by Martin Scorsese or something like that, if you were actually to take everything and film it out. I think In the Heights is so good. And Mitchells vs. the Machines, again, too, is a movie that got very little fan play because it was just a direct Netflix movie. It's one of the funnest animated films I've ever seen. And it has a terrific message. Abby Jacobson is one of my favorite performers, so it's great to hear. Danny McBride, who I've been kind of hit and miss with at times, is very good in it. I think Mitchell's vs. Machines is one of the one of the funnest movies. And sometimes you just got to love some fun.
Yep, I completely agree with that. My guest today has been the great Chris Crawford. I say that about every guest, so I'll let it go to your head.
Thank you, sir.
You can find him on Twitter at Crawford_MILB and read his work on baseball. He actually writes about baseball, so do I sometimes, over at NBC Sports Edge. Chris, this has been great. Thank you so much for joining me.
See you soon, buddy.
That's all for this week's show. Thanks so much for listening. Keep an eye out for me later this week to start posting some actual in-person scouting notebooks. Once I get out to Arizona, it will be very, very good to get back out to the ballpark. Thanks again, everyone. Stay safe.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.